Our study continues at this time in the 9th chapter of Proverbs. And in this 9th chapter of Proverbs, we have the wisdom of God and the wisdom of the devil contrasted. Both of these wisdoms are inviting us, the reader, to come in to a feast that's been prepared and to partake of that particular wisdom. In the first part of the chapter, we have wisdom, the wisdom of God, inviting people to come into the feast, verses 1 through 12. In the second part of the chapter, verses 13 through 17, we have a foolish woman on the part of the devil inviting ones to come in and partake of that feast. And so we're now in the beginning of the 10th verse, right in the middle of this. So I'd like to just give a brief review of the first 9 verses here. In verse 1, wisdom hath builded her house. She has hewn out her 7 pillars. So here we see that wisdom has prepared a place, a house, to have this feast. Verse 2, she's killed her beast. She hath mingled her wine. She hath also furnished her table. So she's prepared the table. She's made preparation for the feast. Verse 3, she has sent forth her maidens. She crieth upon the highest places of the city. So the invitation is sent out to all to come and to partake of this feast. All are invited to the feast given by wisdom. Verse 4, whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. As for him that wanteth understanding, she saith to him, come, eat of my bread, and drink of the wine which I have mingled. So those who need instruction, those who need wisdom, those who need to know what God's will is, certainly are invited to come and to partake of this feast. It's a great opportunity for them to come and to be made better. She further says to them, forsake the foolish and live. Go in the way of understanding. That's the proper thing to do. Get away from the foolish teaching in this world and come to the proper teaching of God. And there she says, live. Verse 7, we see there are those that reject this. He that reproveth the scorner getteth to himself shame. And he that rebuketh the wicked man getteth himself a blot. So all are not going to accept this invitation. Some are going to turn it down and scorn it and ridicule the one who gives the invitation. So in verse 8, reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. Now not all are scorners. Not all are refusing this. The wise will love it. They will accept it. Further, verse 9 says, give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. So those who are truly wise will accept the invitation. They want to get more wisdom. They want to be instructed in the way of the Lord, and they will come to the feast, whereas the others will deride the one who gives the invitation and even make fun of that person for inviting them to come and be wise. Now we're ready to move into verse 10. And beginning in verse 10, we have the instructions given to those who are invited to the feast of God. Instructions which both wisdom and the maidens give. First of all, tell them where the true wisdom is found and what will the nourishment be at wisdom's table. So verse 10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. So we see that the first step toward wisdom and the first step toward salvation is a reverence toward God and His majesty and a dread of His wrath. All of the laws and rules of divine service come from the fact that the heart has a true reverence for God. That is the beginning of wisdom. But to complete this service to God, the head must be filled with the knowledge of God. The knowledge of holy things is understanding. Things that pertain to the service of God are called holy things. We're to have an understanding of these things. We're to know how to worship, how to live, what sin is, our duty to family and church and nation. We're to know about our adversary, the devil, and how to overcome the forces of evil. We're to know about the judgment day and about heaven and hell. God's word is where we get this knowledge of holy things, which is understanding. Verse 11 says, for by me thy days shall be multiplied, and the years of thy life shall be increased. Those invited to the Lord's feast are told about the benefits of having this wisdom here in verse 11. It will contribute to the health of the body, so the years of your life on earth will be increased, while the foolish behavior and lack of control of other men will shorten their days. But best of all, This wisdom will bring you to heaven, and there your days will be multiplied to infinity, and the years of your life shall be increased without end. There is no true wisdom except in service to God, and no true life except life found in that way. Verse 12 says, If thou be wise, thou shalt be wise for thyself, but if thou scornest, thou alone shalt bear it. Here we see that another part of the message included in this invitation to God's great feast is to let those invited know what will be the consequences of their choosing or refusing this vital offer by God. Those who choose to follow God will be happy. Thou shalt be wise for thyself. They will be wise for themselves, not for wisdom's benefit, but for their own good. A person cannot add to God's wealth or God's wisdom. It is for our own good that we make the decision to follow God. Those that are wise for their souls are wise for themselves, for the soul of the person. God already has all wisdom. Obeying this wisdom simply puts us in good favor with God. It employs us in the work which is most beneficial in this world and entitles us to that which is so much more valuable in the world to come. But we see also the shame and ruin of those who refuse wisdom's offer. He says, But if thou scornest, thou alone shalt bear it. Those who are good must thank God, but those who are wicked must thank themselves. Their loss is not caused by God. He's not the author of sin. Only Satan can tempt, and he cannot force. Wicked companions are simply his instruments, so that all the fault must lie on the sinner himself. Every individual is responsible for his own conduct, so that the choices we make affect our own lives. Remember, you had this fair and great offer made to you. You would not accept it. You had an opportunity for life, but you chose death instead. You can blame only yourself. Next, in verse 13, we're given a contrast between the feast of God offered by wisdom and the feast of sin offered by an immoral woman. We have heard what wisdom has to say, trying to encourage us to attend to the things of God and godliness, and one would think the whole world would accept this invitation. But beginning in verse 13 here, we're told how the tempter is to seduce unwise souls into the path of sin. And strange as it may seem, with most persons, the tempter is successful, and the invitation given by God is ignored. Who is the tempter? Here, the tempter is depicted as a foolish woman, who is fully herself in opposition to wisdom. Verse 13 says, A foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple and knoweth nothing. Now that's not a very good inviting description of someone to be following. Carnal, sensual, pleasure is no doubt represented by this foolish, sensual woman. Carnal pleasure is the great enemy to godliness and a sure way to sin. Sinful pleasure is usually associated with sin involving alcohol or sex. And in more modern cultures, the use of mind-altering drugs for recreational purposes is usually involved. These practices also numb the mind to the truth and kill moral conviction. The woman is described here to be, first of all, very ignorant. She is very simple and knows nothing profitable for the soul. She has no reasonable basis to offer for anyone to follow her. When her soul listens to her, she works out all the knowledge of holy things. They're no longer thought about or considered. They're lost and forgotten. Hosea 4, verse 11, Whoredom and wine and new wine take away the heart. Secondly, this woman is very demanding to have her way. The less she has to offer in the way of wisdom and rational reasoning, the more violent and pressing she is. She gets away by making a lot of noise and imposing herself on others. She's clamorous and noisy, as noted here in verse 13. Verse 14 says, For she sitteth at the door of her house on a seat in the high places of the city. She's watching for a prey, not as Abraham at his tent door seeking to do good. She sits on a seat, and the word here means throne. She has a prominent position in society and has a certain amount of respect and authority in the world. She regards all as if they were her debtors and obligated and privileged to do her bidding. She regards herself as a person of high reputation, as though it were a high calling to live after the flesh. Her influence reaches far, and she has no shame for her moral values. to regard herself as a blessing to all who would be free from the restraints of morality and decency. She challenges anyone and all to accept and participate in her reckless way of life. Verse 15 says, to call passengers who go right on their ways. And that verse reads like this in the NIV version, calling out to those who pass by who go straight on their way. She calls those who have been trained up in the right paths. They know what is right and are starting on the right paths. They're not looking for trouble, as the young man was in chapter 7, verse 8, who is going in the way to her house. But here we see the tempter has her eyes on those who want to do right. She lays snares for them. They are going right on in their ways. They're not looking for trouble, but she's looking for them. She uses all her abilities and charms to pervert them. If they continue in the right way, she'll call after them and make the temptation even more urgent. Verse 16, whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. And as for him that wanteth understanding, she saith to him, now in this verse, we see it's identical to verse 4. There in verse 4, the servants of God's wisdom were calling those in to hear. And there they were saying, whoso is simple. That is, those that don't understand the ways of God, come in and let us show you the ways of God. Here, whoso is simple, those that don't understand the ways of the world. Let us show you the ways of the world. Those who are not aware of her true nature, those who are simple, will yield to the temptation of her call and will turn into her house and accept her invitation. In verse 13, the woman is called simple because she is ignorant of the ways of God. Here the young prey is called simple because he's ignorant of the ways of the world. His curiosity at the first later will become sinful lust unless he resists before it is too late. Yet, while he is still unaware of her true nature, she speaks to him, trying to entice him to come into her house and partake of her feast of sinful pleasure. Verse 17 says, stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Here we see what she offers, water and bread, not nearly the quality of meat and mingled wine which the woman of wisdom offered. She offered water and bread. What sin has to offer is much inferior to God's wisdom. The sin is made more enticing than usual because it is stolen bread and water eaten in secret. The fear of being discovered makes it more thrilling. The pleasures of prohibited lust seem to be more enticing than the joy of lawful pleasures. Dishonest gain is preferred to that which is obtained honestly, as we learn here in verse 17. This appeals to that part of human nature which is contrary to God, that we desire what is forbidden. This has been handed down from our first parents who thought the forbidden tree to be a tree to be desired above all others. It also shows how deceived humans are in thinking they can hide from God by doing something in secret so that it will never be discovered or to have to be accounted for on the day of judgment. This is the reason Adam and Eve hid themselves after their first sin. So we see the invitation given by wickedness to come into that feast and to learn about the things of the world. But here in verse 18, we're going to see what Solomon says about this. Verse 18 says, but he knoweth not that the dead are there and that her guests are in the depths of hell. Here we have given the information which the simple and those who lack understanding do not have. This is the knowledge we need to have to prevent us from turning into the house of the immoral woman and accepting the invitation to dine at the feast of sin. The simple, and he that lacketh understanding, does not know, will not believe, will not consider, the tempter will not let him know that the dead are there. Those who live in pleasure are dead while they live, dead in trespasses and sins. The sinful pleasures are accompanied by terrors, like the terrors of death itself. Her guests that are treated with these stolen waters are not only on the highway to hell and at the brink of it, but they're already in the depths of hell, under the power of Satan, led captive by Satan at his will, never having true happiness while here on earth because they are at odds with their Creator. Sin that is not repented of has no remedy. It is the bottomless pit already. Here Solomon shows the hook. Those that believe him will not take the bait. Here in this chapter, we have been given the invitation by the woman of wisdom to God's feast, contrasted with the immoral woman's invitation to the feast of sin. After looking at these two invitations and the advantages and disadvantages of which way we would go, we can now make a more intelligent choice as to which feast we choose to attend. So we bring Proverbs chapter 9 to a close.